Live from Studio 89, overlooking Lake Michigan from downtown Chicago, it's another Big Hour where Chicago comes to talk on the Big 89, the Weekend WLS. WLS.
I'm Paul Harris. Thanks for listening this afternoon. Partly cloudy day. We're going to go to about 55 later on. The wind is going to be blowing 20, 30 miles an hour. Tomorrow may gust up to 40 miles an hour. We'll pretty much stay partly cloudy with temperatures in the 50s during the day and 40s at night right through tomorrow night. It's 48 degrees now in Chicagoland. And joining me here on the Big 89 WLS, Josh Kraushaar, who's a political correspondent for Politico.com, who I've called on several times during this election season to talk about the campaigns. Josh, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back, Paul.
10 days to go. These guys have been campaigning essentially for 500 days or more, and now we're down to 10 days left, with Obama having anywhere in some polls a 4-8 to, in one of the polls, a 12-point advantage, a new poll from Newsweek that came out yesterday afternoon. Is there anything you can see that John McCain can do to turn this around and pull out a victory on November 4th?
It's going to be awfully tough, Paul. I mean, it seems like the election has gotten anticlimactic fairly quickly, and we're seeing early voting. A lot of voters in key battlegrounds like Ohio and Florida are already going to the polls with the environment not looking good for McCain. And you look at the polling out of the key battleground states, not just battleground states, but Republican-leaning states like Indiana and North Carolina, and you see Obama with small leads, but he's gaining in all those states as well. In Virginia, which hasn't voted for a Democratic candidate for president since 1964. Most polls show Obama with a significant lead. Some polls show him with a double-digit lead. So, the morale is very low with the McCain campaign, and it's striking when you hear McCain campaign staffers talk. They're almost already speaking of the election in the past tense, and there's a New York Times Magazine piece out this weekend that's already online where you have a lot of the leading operatives in the McCain camp speaking anonymously and really kind of talking against each other and trying to preserve their own reputation for history, which is really, fairly unprecedented before the election has actually taken place.
Are they playing the blame game, Josh?
They're trying to make sure that some folks in the McCain camp are blaming Sarah Palin and how her rollout initially was handled. Some are blaming McCain's message initially. Some are blaming the way he handled the economic crisis. But, you don't want to be infighting in the middle of an election, before the election actually has taken place. And I think it really shows you where the McCain campaign sees things. They're looking at the same poll numbers we are. They're looking at, we're hearing that they've reduced spending in key battlegrounds like Colorado, which is a must-win state for McCain in this election. And, the morale is very low, and I think they're seeing the writing on the wall.
Your colleague at Politico, Ben Smith, wrote a piece this weekend about stirrings of a Palin insurgency, that four Republicans close to Governor Palin said that she has decided increasingly to disregard the advice of the former Bush aides who were tasked to handle her, creating occasionally tense situations as she travels the country with them. So there seems to be some discord on that side as well.
Well, it's a remarkable story, and if, reading into the story, there are members of the McCain campaign that are arguing that Palin is doing her own thing. She's not listening to what her advisors are telling her to say, and she's increasingly freelancing on the campaign trail, which is really remarkable. But Palin folks, in turn, say that she feels increasingly chafed by having to stay on message and not really saying what she wants to say on the trail, and she thinks that the McCain the folks in the McCain campaign that have been advising her have been giving her bad advice. But we recently saw this week we reported in Politico that campaign finance reports show the Republican National Committee paying $150,000 for her wardrobe when she's been trying to kind of appeal to the middle class of America, trying to appeal to Joe or Jane six-pack, and that totally undermined the one central message that she'd been driving home at her campaign rallies. And what's striking with the McCain campaign is, given this environment, given how bad it was entering this election for Republicans, you would think that McCain would be appealing to the independents. I mean, that was his brand, his maverick brand. You'd think he'd be going to the center. And in these final few weeks, you've seen McCain and Palin alike appealing to the party's base with talk of Bill Ayers and talk of socialism. And that might work in a better environment for Republicans, but to me it's inexplicable that the McCain campaign has been appealing to the base at a time when the only way to win this election is appealing to the center. And I think Sarah Palin has been part of the problem to that effect.
And do you think that's hurting them with independents?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it's you know, right after the convention, you know, McCain held actually a pretty substantial lead among independents, which is why the polls were so close, which is why McCain actually led by several points after the Republican National Convention. Now, if you look at the Washington Post poll out today, the Newsweek poll, independents are overwhelmingly supporting Barack Obama, and I think it's in no small part. I mean, granted, the economy going south has been a huge reason for that, but also, you know, given that it's a tough environment for Republicans, that the economy has become the major issue in this campaign, for McCain to be talking about Bill Ayers and to talk about issues that aren't really at the center of voters' minds, I think has been a major miscalculation.
Paul Harris talking with Josh Krauss-Haar from Politico.com here on the Big 89 WLS. Josh, you recently did a story about one of McCain's supporters, a congresswoman from Minnesota by the name of Michelle Bachmann, who got in trouble a week ago for going on MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews and criticizing Obama for being anti-American and saying that the media should investigate every member of the House of Representatives and the Senate to find out who's pro-America and who's anti-America. You've got more on that?
Yeah, well, she went up on TV just last night, and there was a big debate within her camp whether she should apologize, whether, you know, what she should do, because she was, this is a congresswoman who's in a pretty Republican district in the exurbs in St. Cloud, in a very Republican part of Minnesota, and she was leading by huge margins in her own polling, and all of a sudden she makes this comment calling Obama anti-American. Her polling is tanking, and then she has to go on TV, giving kind of a, it wasn't a direct apology, but she was definitely addressing the situation and saying she doesn't say the best, she's not very cautious with her words sometimes. And her situation is reflective of a lot of Republicans in very conservative parts of the country as well. They're looking at their own polling numbers. They're seeing John McCain tanking in their districts. These are districts that President Bush easily won in 2000 and 2004, and they're very concerned. They're worried that this election won't only usher in Barack Obama at the top of the ticket, but a lot of Democrats who didn't think they had a chance of winning are also doing surprisingly well in polls. And Bachmann is kind of the representative. She's one of the latest members to say something that she regrets and now is facing the consequences.
Yeah, I want to talk about the impact of the election on Congress, but just one more thing about Bachmann. Mm-hmm. Is she saying that this was like a slip of the tongue?
She said that she didn't phrase it artfully. She's also said that she was tricked into making the comments from Chris Matthews. She was saying that the only point she was trying to make was, you know, that Barack Obama's ties to Bill Ayers and to various people on the Democratic left need to be questioned. But she used the word anti-American on multiple occasions during that interview, and she's been trying to deny that she's almost been trying to deny reality what she actually said. So this TV ad that she put up doesn't apologize for her comments, but she says she doesn't phrase her words artfully. She sometimes doesn't say the things the way she wanted to say it in that occasion, and that's how she's been defending herself. She said that her intent was right, just the way she said her comments were misinterpreted.
Let me tell you something. I don't know as much about politics as the Karl Roves and James Carvilles of the world, but I know that when you're running in a campaign for Congress and your opponent's name is Elwin Tinklenberg and you're ahead by 10 or 15%, and you go say something stupid on TV, and a few days later, you're behind by 2 to 5% in the polls, something has happened. Well, we may have a Congressman Elwin Tinklenberg because of what Bachmann said.
And you know what's remarkable is that Elwin Tinklenberg raised about over $1 million in just about 4 days. That's more money than a lot of congressional candidates raise in an entire 2-year period. So, you know, he's gotten money very, very quickly. The guy who no one had ever heard of before is now becoming a new Democratic celebrity.
Now, let's talk about the impact of the election on Congress. The House is now 235 to 199 in favor of the Democrats. That's a slight majority there. The Senate is an even smaller majority because of the two independents who tend to vote with the Democrats, including Joe Lieberman, although his allegiance may change in the new Senate. We'll see. His vote and Bernie Sanders' vote give the Democrats essentially a 51-49 lead in the Senate. What could happen if either Obama has coattails or the negative attitudes of Americans towards Republicans in general swing in the Democrats' favor?
Well, let's start with the Senate. The Democrats need to pick up 9 seats that are currently held by Republicans to get that 60-seat filibuster-proof majority where Obama would be able to kind of get a lot of legislation passed without having the Republican threat of a filibuster. We're seeing that there are about 11 seats that are up for grabs where Republicans are trailing or within the or only leading by small margins. One of those seats is also in Minnesota, where Al Franken is leading in most polls in the state of Minnesota.
Really?
This is a race that even Democrats were very pessimistic about even a month, 2 months ago, because his personal past was really coming back to haunt him, and he wasn't, you know, known as having the kind of temperament that could run a full-fledged campaign. He's now leading, and that race, Democrats have a very good opportunity to elect Al Franken to the United States Senate.
That's unbelievable.
That's how bad the environment is for the Republicans. We're also talking about a key race in Kentucky, one of the most reliably Republican states. Democrats have hardly been competitive there over the last 10 or 15 years. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Minority Leader, is running neck and neck with a Democratic businessman who many voters there haven't even heard about it until recently, Bruce Lunsford. So, I mean, when we're talking about a potential Senator Al Franken and the leader of the Senate caucus and Mitch McConnell going down, those are seats number 59 and number 60 right there. And that would be if Democrats were to get that 60-seat majority, would be with folks like Al Franken and picking off Mitch McConnell's seat as part of that caucus.
And explain why 60 is a magic number.
Democrats essentially need 60 to prevent Republicans from blocking legislation, preventing Republicans from using the filibuster, which could hold up legislation, slow down the process of legislation. And if Obama, you know, has majorities in both the House and the Senate, he has 60 seats in that Senate, he certainly could get legislation accomplished even much more easily.
Okay, and in the House, where it's now a 36-seat lead for the Democrats, how much could they possibly expand that?
The House, we're looking anywhere between 25 or 35 seats that Democrats are well-positioned to pick up. And we're not just talking about seats in Democratic parts of the country. We're talking about there's a House seat in Idaho, which is one of the most Republican districts in the country. And the newly elected Republican congressman has made some very controversial statements. He's essentially embarrassed himself in office. Democrats have a good chance of winning a seat in Idaho. They have a good chance of picking up a House seat in Wyoming. It's striking how many parts of the country where Republicans used to dominate, and they're now kind of fighting to have their candidates compete. And, a landslide election could also, it could even bring Democratic gains as high as the 40 or 45 seat range. So that's a more bullish expectation.
And what's remarkable, particularly when we talk about the House, is the incredible lead that you have just by being an incumbent congressman. I mean, I think the number is over 90% of incumbent congressmen pretty much get elected. If they run, they get reelected because the money's on their side. They have the position of power running out of the Capitol. And it is very tough to beat an incumbent congressman of either party, isn't it?
Absolutely, and Republicans always also held a financial advantage, which helped the Republican incumbents. I mean, business groups, pharmaceutical groups, Wall Street groups all gave money when the Republicans were in charge. A lot of that money has now gone to House Democrats or Congressional Democratic campaign committees, and it's amazing how much more money they have now on the fundraising side. They've been able to carpet bomb a lot of these districts with advertising and money, and they have a huge financial advantage, which is also playing into their strength politically.
I would, of course, point out that in 1992, when Bill Clinton was elected president and had a Democratic Congress, it only took 2 years for Newt Gingrich and the Republican Revolution to reverse things in the 1994 congressional elections because the Democrats overstepped their authority.
What's striking is if Democrats make the gains that many are projecting, even if Democrats lost the number of seats that the Republicans gained in 1994 when they had the Republican Revolution, they still would have control of Congress. If Democrats pick up as many seats as are projected, this would be the biggest Democratic majority in both houses of Congress since the post-Watergate period, about 1977, which would be quite historic.
But the truth is that most people in this country don't really think about that when they go to the polls because they're only thinking about who they want as their congressman. You can only vote, of course, for who the congressperson in your own district is. You don't get to go and vote, do I want a Democratic Congress, do I want a Republican Congress?
Well, I can bet you that in this final week, if McCain's numbers continue to slow down, we might see some Republican TV advertisements raise that specter of having unchecked Democratic control in the executive branch in both houses of Congress. That hasn't been raised too much at all at this point, but that's what we saw in 1996 when Bob Dole was losing ground in the polls very rapidly. The RNC began to give a lot of money, not to the presidential campaign, but to these Senate battlegrounds, so they could at least have a check on President Clinton at the time, with over 40 seats in the Senate. And we'll see what the RNC does this time. But the threat of a filibuster-proof majority is very real.
All right, Josh, before I let you go, November 4th, Election Day, the whole country is going to be watching the swing states. You mentioned before Virginia and a couple of others. Tell me three or four states that are really going to be the bellwethers, that haven't been, that aren't, you know, a blowout already in the polls, but that are so close that they could be the ones that swing this election one way or the other.
Watch North Carolina, which has been a state that is a southern state, reliably Republican in the past. You see a lot of new voters there, voters that are in the key suburban areas of Charlotte and Raleigh, and that's a state that's going to, we're going to hear the results fairly early. If Obama can win North Carolina, I would say game over. Indiana, another state that has been a rock-solid Republican state. The polls, I believe, close there at 6 o'clock Eastern, so if the networks don't call Indiana for John McCain early on, that's going to be a bad sign for the Republicans. And, you know, look out west to Colorado. Colorado, we've talked about quite a bit, but it's a state that was one of the most Republican states in the country throughout the 80s and 1990s, but Obama has held consistent leads in there, and we'll find out to see how much the environment has changed.
Great analysis, as always, Josh. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Josh Kraushaar is a political correspondent at Politico.com and has become sort of a semi-regular contributor to this show. I'm Paul Harris, back in a moment on the Big 89 WLS.